Okay. So what is your name?
Keith Randall.
And where do you live?
We live 11 miles by road southeast of Ashland on 25 Road.
Okay. And how old are you?
I'm 74. I'll be 75 next month.
Good. So when did you first become aware of what's been known as the Starbucks fire that started on March 6th?
I was in a CMS Electric Co-op board meeting in Meade on Monday, and about midday, our operations manager came in and said there was a fire southwest of Englewood that was moving northeast, and that's, we just assumed it was a small prairie fire. He came back about a half hour later and said that the fire was large. They were calling in multiple units, and he heard that Englewood was going to be evacuated, and that caused quite a bit of concern. I go to the meetings with two guys from Comanche County, Joe Murphy and Don Neiswanger, and I had ridden with them, left my pickup in Ashland, so I didn't have a vehicle, so I had to get back with them. We heard that Highway 160 was closed, but we hadn't been driving 160 anyway, because at that point in time, 160 between the Meade Junction and Meade was closed due to a bridge construction. And so we'd been driving what we call Old 160, which is a gravel road that goes between Ashland and Meade.
It's County U.
It's County U. Okay. Uh-huh. Well, I didn't know. Well, I just called it Old 160. Anyway. Well, we'd take 160 after the Englewood Junction, and then we'd drop south and go over. But this time, we stayed on that road all the way into Ashland. And I got into town where my pickup was, and the town had been evacuated, and it was kind of eerie because there wasn't anybody on the streets but law enforcement. I've never seen so many law enforcement vehicles in my life. I don't know where they came from. And they were a little concerned about me and who I was and where I was going, but I told them where I lived, and they said, well, we don't recommend that you go down there. And I said, well, I am going down there. My wife's down there, and I'm going. And so I went. When I got home, and I'd been in touch with Judy during the day, and other than smoke coming in, and neighbor Curb Pike was around, and he was kind of monitoring our situation, but the fire wasn't anywhere near us at that point. In fact, there wasn't even all that much smoke. By the time I left Ashland, it takes about 15 minutes to get down there. You couldn't see our buildings from a quarter mile away. The smoke had reached us.
So when you were in Meade and came back on the old 160, mm-hmm. could you see the fire?
We saw no fire at all. We could see smoke, and at that point we were starting to see smoke in the north too, which we didn't know there was a fire up there, but obviously one had started. No, we saw no fire on old 160. The fires apparently weren't anywhere near Ashland at that point. They were down in the Gardner Acres area, moving northeast towards Ashland, but no, we saw no flames. It was just smoke.
So by the time, what time was it when you returned home? Do you have an approximate idea?
Oh, I think I got home about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, more or less. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the smoke was getting heavy. We didn't know where the fire was. And so the first thing I did, my son Jim, who owns the cows on the ranch, takes them to the Garden City area to put them on corn stalks in the winter. The cows had just come back, and we had put them in two different pastures just a few days before. The main herd was in a pasture of old soil bank grass that's very tall and was just one big fire trap. There was no county road. So I took a feed truck and went over and moved those cows and brought them back down to the pens. And I need to explain that the ranch buildings are 3/4 mile south from where I live on 25 Road. Anyway, I moved those cows down to the pens where we'd had the flexibility to go in any direction with them, depending on if the fire came. We didn't know at that point if we were going to have a fire, but I moved those cows down there. At that point, well, we lost our power about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I remember that. It was just right at 5. The power went off. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows out in the country, no power, no water. So we were without water at that point. About the time I got the cows moved, I could see flames to the north, 3 miles up, kind of where Frank York lives. I could see fire moving south up there at that point. So I went up to see how close the fire was, and it had come. It was east of Ashland. It had moved south and had come. It had jumped across W Road, that runs. That's an east-west road that runs north of Frank's house.
Right.
And had gotten into a CRP field that was east of his house. We locally, it's all, everybody calls it the big field.
Right.
But anyway, it was moving south through that. Curb Pike, of course, it was moving right at Curb's house, which is half a mile north of where we live. His brother Lawson was out there, and they were starting to move machinery out of his place to get it away from the buildings because we were afraid it was going to come on south. So I stayed with them. We were beating out fire in the ditch. But to explain that further, on the south side of this big field, the CRP field, Bev York has a wheat field. And running north-south through that wheat field is a big draw that's just grass and weeds, which leads right down to Curb's house. The south of that field, Curb has a pasture north of his house, but it follows what we call Sprinkle Creek, which goes, and then it goes right down to his house. And we knew if that fire got in that draw that his place was in trouble. Well, it did. And we saw that fire come down that through that CRP and get into Bev's that draw, and it came right on down the creek, and there wasn't anything we could do at that point. Curb and Lawson had moved all the machinery they could move, and it was also moving east. There's a tree belt on the east side. We all call it the Piper Tree Belt. It goes back to the former owners, and we knew if that thing caught fire, that would be an inferno.
So did law enforcement, were they out in that area? Did they warn you or anything?
No, we had no... We never saw law enforcement. We had no phone call. We never saw a fire unit. We saw nobody.
Okay. So when did you go get Judy?
Well, Judy was home, and I was being real careful of watching this fire because it wasn't anywhere close to our house at that point. And we had county roads that we could get out on if we had to. So she was home. And Sherry Pike had gone to Buckland. Sherry was not there. Frank was not home. Frank York and Sue weren't home because Frank works as stock growers. They'd been evacuated in Ashland, and they'd gone to Coldwater. So there was nobody up at his place.
Right.
And so it was Curb at that point in the neighborhood. It was Curb, Lawson, and me. And anyway, the strangest thing, this was the first of the many miracles that we saw. That fire burned down right to the north, to the top of Curb's buildings where his shelter belt is. And his shelter belt's like all of the shelter belts. It's packed full of old blown-in tumbleweeds and broken dead tree limbs, and I mean just a big fire trap. That fire burned right up against that fence on his shelter belt, and it's turned to the east. It walked right down that fence line, never went into the shelter belt, turned back to the south, and burned southeast to where his stackyard, where his round bales are, and we're all right there on the by his mailbox and our mailbox watching this. And it burns down and starts his bales on fire and never touched the building.
Wow.
It made a left turn, made a right turn, and went around his buildings. So Curb never lost a building, and he didn't have any livestock at that time. So at that point, and then the Piper Tree Belt caught on fire, and that was a non-event. We expected that thing to just explode. Well, the drought, when it killed out all those cedars, and it just kind of thinned it out, it was just kind of a quiet fire. It just kind of walked down through it, and it would burn part of it, and it wouldn't burn part of it, and it finally just kind of burned itself out. But no, we saw no fire units at all. The fire moved east. The wind kept changing directions. And it was kind of pushing it east at that point. And we were beating it out in the ditch to keep it from going into Curb's pasture that's east of his house. So we kept it from moving into that pasture. It had burned another way. It burned around the old Swayze place, never touched a building. Just incredible. And we were watching Frank's place for him to make sure that it didn't burn back into his place. And that fire went on east, but at that point we couldn't go east because of fire and smoke. And I think that's the one that it burned east. I think the one that got Kenny Domi's place. Now, he didn't lose his house, but he lost some outbuildings, and actually it kind of scorched the house. But anyway, that it was about dark. In fact, it was dark. When Curb's bales caught on fire, it was dark. And during this whole time, our son Jim kept calling for me. He lives in Garden City, and he kept calling and saying, "I need to get down there, I need to get down there." And I kept saying, "Jim, we don't have any power. There's no fire units. There's nothing you can do. Just stay home. Besides, the highways are all closed.
Right.
You can't get here." He called me about 10 o'clock, and he said, "I'm on the way." He just couldn't stand it. And he had our two grandkids with him, who were teenagers.
Right.
And he called me later that night. Well, after it got dark and the fire, we knew Curb's place was okay. Well, I went home, and we were just monitoring the fire at that point. And it wasn't anywhere close to us after it had gone on east. And Jim called me from, he got to Buckland. He said, "I couldn't go south at Dodge. They had the highway shut off at Dodge." He said, "I went to Buckland. They had 34 closed. I couldn't do that." He said, "What am I going to do?" And I said, "Jim, go back to Kingston and see if you can get down the lake road." And he did, and he did. They hadn't figured out that people were going down the lake road at that point, because there were others too.
Yeah.
They made it down, drove really close to some big fires that were up north of town. It was interesting. They said when they came over this last range of hills looking down on Ashland, they said that was the most incredible sight. They said it just like the whole world was on fire. All they could see was fire. But anyway, they got home, got to our place, and went on down to the ranch. And we were up most of the night. In fact, they were up all night. They told me to go home and get some sleep, and I finally got a couple of hours of sleep. But that kind of wrapped up Monday. We got up Tuesday morning, and there was still no fire around us. And so we were running up and down the road again. That fire, that field of Frank's, that CRP was still burning.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get back, and so we were running back and forth checking his place. Fortunately, the wind had gone down. The up to 70-mile-an-hour winds that were reported Monday, they were down to probably 30, 35 on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Started to say something there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, what you thought the wind was blowing.
The wind had gone down. But we got up Tuesday morning, and we could see a lot of smoke, and we could literally see flames off way in the distance west and I think to the north. But there wasn't any fire anywhere near us. And we kind of thought that maybe we had dodged the bullet on that. Well, then the first time we saw a fire unit, they showed up at Frank's house because not sure if he'd gotten home at that point. But and I don't know who they were. There wasn't an Ashland. Yeah, there was two. One unit was out of Ashland, and one was from someplace else. Because the fire had burned, and it was coming in on a pasture that comes right in on Frank's buildings, and they got that put out. And they wanted to know if we were in danger, and I said, "No, there's wheat fields between us." It already burned out that draw going down to Curb's house, and I said, "The only thing left to burn between our place and here is just wheat fields, and so I don't think we've got a problem." They came on down and filled one of the fire units, one of the Ashland fire units, to want to know if they could get water anywhere, because, again, our wells weren't pumping. I said, "Yeah, I got a windmill over about from Frank's house, it'd be about 2 miles." And so they came down and filled their tank with water at one of my windmills. But we thought at that point we were okay. And by about noon, we could see smoke building to the west. And so we, right after lunch, I think it was early afternoon, we went down into what we call our south pasture and got up on a big hill down there, and we're watching, and we could see fire coming down the river. It was west of us several miles at that point, but it was moving down the river. Again, the wind had gone down. I don't think the wind at that point was blowing more than maybe 30 miles an hour, which to some people may sound like a lot of wind, but it wasn't 70.
Yeah.
But we could see that fire moving down the river, moving east.
Could you see fire like down at Snake Creek then?
Well, it was on the west end of Snake Creek Ranch, but it hadn't reached where Snake Creek buildings are.
Okay.
Of course, they're south of the river.
Right.
This fire was coming right down the Cimarron.
And where Max and Marge Miley live, north of the river?
Max and Marge are, they're north of the river, but it hadn't gotten to their place yet.
Okay.
This was the one that got to their place, but right. It was still moving from the west, going down the river.
Yeah.
And it was moving pretty fast, because it'd get in that tamarack and all that junk along the river, and we thought, well, we're going to dodge the bullet, because the wind is straight out of the west. And so we're up on the hill watching it, and that's when I felt the wind shift. And I looked back behind me. We got a windmill right behind us, and I saw that tail swinging to the northeast, and I thought, oh. And then we saw it coming up through the sand hills north of the river. That was on the Eubank Ranch. Mm-hmm. And we watched it literally come across the fence into our pasture. Well, we still thought at that point that it was just going to burn out the east, maybe a couple hundred acres of that pasture of ours. Then we saw some more smoke to the west, straight west, and we thought, oh boy, there's another one back that's gone north of this big river pasture. That was the one kind of got my attention, because I had driven down into the southwest corner of our pasture. I was trying to figure out where that fire was to the west, because I couldn't see any flames. I could see smoke, but I couldn't see any flames. And I got down there. I still couldn't see anything but smoke, and I turned, and I'm going north up the trail, heading back up towards our ranch buildings and the pens. I thought, well, I better get up there, because Jim had already headed back up that way with the two kids, and I drove out of that smoke, and there's just a wall of fire in front of me. I thought, oh, my gosh. Well, it wasn't. I don't want to over-dramatize this. I mean, it wasn't like it was coming at me or anything, but I had to turn and drive about a quarter mile to get around that fire, and I got back okay, and we got up to the pens. Well, at that point, we knew there was fire coming at us, at the cattle and at our place, at the ranch buildings from the southwest. So we started moving cattle. The group that I had brought out of the day before down to the pens, Curb was there to help, and Tammy Seacat, her son Darren Seacat, showed up, and they helped and got those cows moved onto a wheat field of Curb Pike's that was east of our buildings. And then they all went west to get another smaller herd that we had west of the place. They moved those onto a wheat field of Dusty Voorhees's that was right across on the north side of Z Road. I had left them at that point and gone back to take Judy. I knew Curb Pike's place was safe at that point, so I took Judy up to Sherry had gotten back at that point. I took Judy up to stay with Sherry, and Jenny was there. Their daughter Jenny was there. And then I came back down. Well, at that point, the fire had just about reached the ranch buildings and pens. And so we were frantically, Curb had left to go back to his place, and Seacats had left, but the two kids and, no, Curb was still there. Curb was still there. Seacats had left. But anyway, because the cattle were safe, and that was, we really appreciated their help. But anyway, we were trying to get machinery out of the place, and we got two of the three horses. They'd got them in a trailer and trailered them up to where I live, which is three-quarter mile north of the ranch buildings. The kids were getting stuff out of the ranch house as fast as they could. Well, finally, the fire was so close and the smoke was so thick, we thought we got to get out of here. And so we jumped in our pickups, and that was the one time that I was, that really had our attention, because literally we had zero visibility. I mean, we had no eye. You couldn't see anything. I could not see, my windshield, it was just like somebody had just blacked out your windshield because the smoke was so thick. And I drove around. We've got a big windbreak on the north side of the buildings, and I thought, well, if I get on the north side, maybe the smoke will be a little thinner. It wasn't.
Is this black smoke or white?
No, it's
smoke?
Gray smoke. It's gray smoke, but literally could not see anything. And so I just rolled down of course, I had the windows up so I could breathe, and I had to roll down my driver's side window, and I just put my head out, and I'm looking down at the grass, because I knew if I could, there was a trail that led out to where the road was.
Right.
And if I could find that trail, I'd just follow that trail, and I found it and got out fine, and Jim did the same thing. And so we got out okay. Well, there wasn't anything we could do at that point. We just assumed the place was lost. I went home to start packing up stuff because we didn't know where that fire was going, and I wanted to get... We had already packed our 4Runner with
right.
things you just got to have. And I thought, well, I'll go home and get some more stuff and put it in the pickup.
And you still don't have electricity or water?
Oh, no. There's no power at all.
Yeah. And, you don't have a generator?
Oh, I have a little one, but it wouldn't be... Can't pump water with it.
Yeah.
And so, anyway... pretty soon the smoke kind of lifts, and Jim was just out on the county road, and we go back down to the ranch buildings expecting to find nothing but ashes, and the place is intact. That fire burned right up against the south fence where the buildings are, turned, mm-hmm. went straight east, never burned into the yard. It burned around on the west side, burned down into the creek. Came back on the north side, same way that it, and the same thing happened like up at Curbs. We've got a tree row, and Jim had all of his round bales stacked on the south side of that. That tree row is full of weeds and dead limbs, and it's just a big, that fire walked right down, going east down that fence row, down that tree row, and never burned into them. We have, and then it turns and kind of goes, and Curb and Jim were out waiting for it on the east side of our buildings, and they got it beat down, and it was burning into that wheat field where we had the cattle, and that they got it stopped at that point. Just an absolute miracle. I mean, we never lost an animal, we never lost a building, we lost no machinery.
Lost pasture and fence?
We lost all of our pasture but one half section, and we lost fence. But we, you know, grass regrows, fence can be rebuilt.
Yeah. So when you talk about pasture, how many acres of pasture?
Oh, we're
a
little ranch. We lost, I don't know, 600-700 acres of grass.
Okay. And like fence?
We had about 6 miles of fence affected, but... A lot of it, and this was our good fortune. The majority of our, we really have two neighbors: the Eubank Ranch and Curb Pike.
Right.
Most of what burned adjoined the Eubank Ranch. Well, over the years, since Terry Eubank, and of course Terry's deceased now, but when he bought that ranch, he and I started replacing fans, and we had continued up until about 2 years ago. And so most of the fence between the Eubank Ranch and us was new fence. It was steel and four steel and creosote. That's what we had put in. We discovered that new creosote steel doesn't burn, and new creosote posts don't burn easily. And most of that fence, while it was a little damaged in places, mm-hmm. wasn't that badly damaged. Now, where we adjoin Curb, that's older fence, and we lost quite a bit of that. The last stretch of fence, I still kid Bill Seacat about this because he, of course, manages the Eubank Ranch, but the last stretch we put in about a half a mile of fence, he decided he wanted to use hedge posts instead. Hedge post burns. every one of those hedge posts is just hanging there. That wasn't a big deal. So anyway, We really, it's just a miracle. We came out of it, other than losing grass and fence, we were unscathed. And so that was...
So what do you think's your most vivid memory of the fire?
On Monday and Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you talking about overall?
Overall, maybe, yeah. What's the thing that stands out for you?
Oh, my.
Did you see something you'd never seen before?
Well, I've been in prairie fires all my life. I mean, back in the 50s, and I'm going way back, but I was just a kid back in the early 50s, but in the drought of the 50s, it just seemed like in the summer, all we did was fight prairie fires at times. And I've seen a lot of prairie fires, and they didn't have the equipment back in those days, but I've never seen a fire no one has, that encompassed this much and did this much devastation. My most vivid memory, I guess, is probably just hearing the reports of the losses and realizing how fortunate we were that we didn't lose really, again, you know, grass and fences, but that's, I mean, grass regrows, fences are replaced, but when I, you know, we have so many good friends who lost homes, lost cattle, lost other buildings, machinery. I mean, just the devastation. I think that's the most vivid thing, that this fire is forever locked into the psyche of this community. I mean, anyone who lived here at that time will never forget those 2 days. Pardon? Oh, yes. I need to go back a story. When on Tuesday, when that fire was burning around our place, Jim and I were busy with machinery and cattle. We didn't know that fire was still burning. There's a little creek, spring creek, that runs on the west side of our building. We didn't know that fire was still burning down in there. And we didn't even know. And it came up out of that creek, and it was, there's a little what we call horse pasture that's right on the west side of our buildings. That fire came up out of that creek and was burning right towards the building. This was a kind of a secondary fire after it had gone around the place. We didn't know it was there. Our two grandkids, who at that time were 16 and 18, saw it coming up through that pasture, and those two kids grabbed shovels and went out there and beat that out. We think they literally saved our buildings, because we didn't, yeah, we didn't know it was there. And they saw it and put it out. Yeah.
So have you ever seen a fire where the wind shifted so much?
No, the wind just kept changing directions, and that's what's weird. There's just no, fires create their own climate. Mm-hmm. And whether that caused the wind shift or whether it was other, we don't know, but the wind just kept changing directions. And it was so strange because, again, it burned around Curb's place. It burned around our place. The old Swayze place up there, which Charlie's there part of the time, but nobody lives there. It burns around that place. Vernon Howell has an old set of buildings that he'd probably like to have burned out in the middle of that section west of us. It burns the entire section, doesn't touch those buildings. And yet, these beautiful homes in the county get burned. It just, yeah, there is just no explanation for why that fire burned what it burned. Back to your question, Diana, the memory of the losses is probably stands out. The memory of how we escaped those losses is so vivid. And then the outpouring of support and goodwill. After the fire, we had several days, but when the trucks started arriving, we had trucks coming in with pay. We had to finally just stop them. We were just being overwhelmed with, we didn't need that much feed. We had trucks from, of course, Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, South Dakota, Ohio. All the way from Ohio. We had 3 trucks coming from Ohio. 2 came in from South Dakota. Just incredible, the outpouring of support. I remember well the people in Ashland who were volunteering, the ladies at our church, weren't ladies, there were men involved that were feeding people down at Christian Church. We went in and ate breakfast one morning. We ate 2 suppers in there.
When did you get your electricity back?
Electricity came back on Wednesday afternoon, about the same time it went off Monday. It was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So we were about 48 hours without power. Power came on, the water came on, and I may have had the best shower I have ever taken in my life.
Yeah. So did you have any, like, physical effects from the fire? Were you, did you have sore muscles? Did you get hurt? Did anybody get hurt?
Nobody got hurt of anything significant. We had smoke in our eyes. We had, you know, thank goodness. When we went into the church to eat, they had a row of eye drops in there for us. No, not really. I think seemed like Jim did something, pulled a muscle. Nothing significant, no. Nothing that wouldn't heal.
Yeah. And the financial loss from the fire?
Ours, compared to other people's, was minimal. We did, that's a vivid memory, because the very day after the fire, Wednesday morning, we were already starting fencing, and I came into spots to get some posts. They were already running low, and I didn't want to take more than my share, so I got one bale of creosote posts. And I went in to pay for them, and Sue looked at me and said, "They're paid for." And I went, "What are you talking about?" And that's when I heard about what Neil Kay had done. And so that was, you know, oh my goodness, I'll never forget that. And so,
yeah.
But we got on the fences quickly. Again, our damage on fences, because of all that new fence, we only really had one short stretch of fence that was wouldn't hold cattle. The rest of it was basically patch and repair, and of course curb pike was on things immediately, and we were on the fences that very next day. And then we had a volunteer crew come in. We had two of them come in. We had one that came in, they were from Ensign, most of them. They have some connection, I think in fact they're related to Jessica Wilkinson. Jim rents the old McMillian place southwest of Ashland. We run cows over there, and it didn't burn.
Right.
They had no fire over there. And so they were concerned because Chris runs a few cows with us, and his cows were over at our place, and so he was most concerned about our situation. And these people, I think, were lined up somehow with, I think Chris and Jessica lined them up, because we had a fencing crew come in. When did they come in? I think they came in Wednesday. I think. Maybe it was Thursday. I tell you, Diana, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday were just kind of a blur. I know the first hay truck arrived Wednesday afternoon because it was a friend of Jim's from Garden City. In fact, it's a fellow out there that he rents some pasture from, and he's has a large farming operation. He rolled in Wednesday afternoon with a load of alfalfa hay.
Yeah.
The others didn't start coming for several days after that. But anyway, that's... I don't know. That's, you know, they're just, everybody that's lived through it has so many stories to tell, and it burns so many places. And it's kind of sad, the old places that burned, that even the ones that nobody lived in, that there's no monetary value there. But like my grandfather's place up at Sitka that burned, the old buildings were still there. Those buildings were really old. That barn that burned was there when my grandfather bought that place in the 1890s. It literally was already there. We don't know how old that barn was. Well, all that's gone. So,
yeah, you know, there's a lot of emotions in this whole thing, and overwhelmed with what people lost or what they didn't lose and stuff. How do you think people have been coping with the emotional part of the fire? How have you coped with that part?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think I could maybe answer that better in a year or two. At this point, it's still so vivid. I think ours, personally, right now, ours is just a huge sense of relief because we escaped with such minimal loss compared to so many ranches. And again, we're a very small operation. We, you know, compared to most of the ranches in Clark County, we're just a fly on the wall. But I think a huge sense of relief, and still one, though, of we feel so badly, because when we talk to friends who have larger ranches that lost so much, it's just that sense of loss and trying to understand what they're going through. So, but I can't really answer. I talk to them, and I don't sense any great emotional stress. They're coping, just working day and night to try to get fences back primarily. Right. That's at this point. And, of course, those who lost homes, they're having to deal with that issue. I think for the most part, you know, the people that live in these ag communities are a pretty tough lot mentally. You know, we've been through blizzards and prairie fires and droughts and busted cattle markets, and resilient maybe is the word. Now, this may be the biggest event in terms of all that, but, you know, I think the resiliency and I think people over generations have built up the ability to cope with this kind of thing. And we'll be okay. Even the ones that lost so much, we'll be okay.
So what do you perceive as the most positive thing that came from this fire? Or more than one
thing?
Well,
in terms of human emotion, I think the outpouring of goodwill and the communities coming together, I think it really brought the community together more so than it ever were a close-knit community we already were. I think this made it even closer. And I think people's seeing the outpouring of just goodwill that came from outside of the area was just a tremendous emotional boost to everybody. From a really long-term perspective, the country, I'm speaking of the land now, not the people, but the land. Well, the people too, to a degree. I think it'll make the people stronger, and it's actually good for the pastures.
Yeah.
At our place, I look at a better ranch now than what we had before. It burned up a lot of stuff that was out in the pastures that we didn't want. It burned a lot of debris along the creeks and brush that built up and stuff that we'd kind of been wanting to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't the way we planned to do it, but we've got a lot of old soil bank grass. It's old world blue stem, Caucasian blue stem, that's good grass at times and not so good at others, and it's actually grass that I would have liked to have burned. Now, again, I didn't want to do it this way, but those are better pastures today than they were before the fire. And so from a purely pasture management standpoint, our pastures are better off than they were.
Did your grass come back pretty quickly?
The grass came back quickly, and I didn't mention that, but the good Lord sent us rain. Just a few days after that fire, the first rains came. And they were wonderful rains. They were significant in amount. They came gentle. They didn't erode. Now, I understood in some areas that they did have some erosion, but we did not. And it started raining from not long after the fire. It rained clear up until early May. And it just rained. And our pastures came bouncing back. They were turning green a few days after the fire. You could see that little bit of green starting. And within about 10 days to 2 weeks, they were turning really green. And if you drove through them today, you'd never know we had a fire. That's the way it is. I mean, you drive down through there and you're like, what fire? I mean, they have really recovered. We had the one half section that did not burn, thank goodness. I didn't mention that on Tuesday night, a fire crew arrived from South Central Kansas. They were all, I think, and Jim and Judy and I had come to town to get some food. The fire had gone past our buildings and was still burning in this, what we call the South Pasture. Caleb and Casey, our grandkids, were still out there, and they said this fire crew rolled in. There were like 14 trucks from Sumner, Cali, and Butler counties. And these guys apparently work as a unit all the time. They said they rolled down into that pasture and put that fire out so fast, and it saved that one half section that didn't burn for us, because the fire was moving towards it, and those guys had that fire out they said they put that out so fast and they were on their way. So we had a half section that didn't burn. And so we took the cows back over there. And, of course, then all this feed starts arriving from everywhere. And we were just starting to calve. We had one calf on the ground when this fire came in. So we didn't have any baby calves to move.
And you had no injuries to your cattle, so you didn't have
injuries.
To
We were had medicate. Some concern about smoke inhalation because there were reports. But we have not seen, that we had a few cows that aborted, but that always, we can't necessarily blame that on the fire.
Yeah.
So essentially, compared to other people's livestock losses, we escaped unscathed.
So what can you do or what have you done to prepare for another fire or any kind of a disaster like this, tornado or anything?
The only thing, two things. We're doing a little landscape altering around our house. Now, the fire where we live a half mile south of Curb's house and about three-quarter mile north of the ranch buildings. The fire stopped at Z Road, north of the ranch buildings. We were sitting out on Z Road making sure it stopped there and didn't burn into the pasture that's south of our house. So it didn't get within... It got within a half mile of where we actually live, and that was as close as it got. That's way too close. We're doing some landscaping changes we will be doing. As an example, we've got some pampa grass that's growing right up by the house. Ain't going to be there no more. It's just a big old porch in the winter. We liked it for winter landscaping. It's pretty.
Yes. Yeah.
Too close to the house. Just little things like that. Going to make a list of when we were evacuating the house. We had no plan. We're just grabbing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You grab medicine. You grab photo albums. But you have no plan. We'll have a plan in the future. This is what we want, and this is where it is. Beyond that, Diana, I don't know that there's anything we can do. You know, we live way out in the country. We will always be dependent on electricity to pump water. We're just vulnerable to prairie fire.
So what about the community? What can the community do to prepare?
Can't answer that. I don't know. I think, you know, that it's such a small community, and we have a very small rural fire department, and I need to say, back those 2 days when we didn't see anybody, we understood they're trying to save people's homes. And we were, other than Frank's house, Curb's, it had burned past his place. And the ranch buildings are unoccupied. Jim lives there. My brother lives there part of the time. But nobody lives there full time. And we certainly were not blaming the fire department for not being down there. I don't know what the community could do, really. We just are a small, isolated rural community, and this is big ranch country, and there are big pastures. The terrain is rough. You can't fight it. When it gets rolling on a fire like this, they said, the Dodge City Weather Bureau said they had never seen humidity, that low. When you have those conditions, and a fire like that starts, there's just no stopping it.
Yeah, that's true.
I think everything was done that could be done. And so as far as the community, I don't know what you could do. Maybe have a better... We don't live in town, so I know Ashland got evacuated. And I know there was concern about the rest home and the hospital and things like that. And I think maybe they're doing more to plan for an orderly evacuation, but I can't really speak to that because I wasn't here.
So about the only time you made it to town was to have meals?
Our church was feeding people, and I know later the high school was feeding people, and so we came into town. We came in for one breakfast and two evening meals, which we greatly appreciated. We're so thankful for those people who were preparing food, and they brought food to us twice. Tuesday noon, I think it was, Bill Lang showed up bringing food from our church to feed us, Wednesday noon, Bill Hank and, what's the young man that's in the gun store now?
Oh, Chase Jean?
No, not Chase, his partner. Ryan.
Yeah.
What's Ryan's last name? Can't tell you. Ryan. Anyway, Ryan was with Bill Hank, and they showed up Wednesday noon with food for us. Mm-hmm. So people were bringing us food. And we came into town for a few meals, which was always greatly appreciated, because we had no power again. And, of course, we had food that we could have eaten cold, but the meals were most appreciated.
Did you get a chance to clean up when you came to town?
No. It was offered. We had friends offer showers, and we said, no, we're going back out there. There's no point taking a shower. And so... No, the first shower I got was Wednesday night when the power came on. Like I told you earlier, that may have been the best shower I've ever had. Yeah. There's no way to store water, Diana. You just can't do it. There's no way to. Now, maybe, I've thought about maybe a big generator, but, boy, those are so expensive. And you've got this enormous expense sitting there just probably doing nothing.
So do you have a water reservoir or supply tank or anything there at your house?
No.
Just a well that you pump straight out?
Just a well, yeah. Now, down at the ranch, we've got tanks, stock tanks. And, if that thing is, if we got trapped, you can always go jump in a stock tank. But we didn't, and it wasn't necessary. But, no, they're where we live. Now, curbs, pastures that are kind of around us, there'd be a tank a couple hundred yards from our house, but that would... We were mobile. We were on, kind of on the county road, and our vehicles were packed, and we were ready to get out of there.
And you don't have any spray rigs or anything like that?
Any what?
Spray rig?
No, we don't have any firefighting equipment at all to speak of. We used to years ago, and it was just so small that it wasn't that effective. And I think, actually, that is something we may do. We're looking at maybe... getting a small spray rig fixed up again that we could put on the back of the truck. And
so when you did have one, were you part of the group of farmers and ranchers that made the fire district in the county?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it was anything formal at all, but we've put out many a fire, just little fires where lightning would hit. Mm-hmm. And we could get there quick enough to put the fire out with our... It was a little trailer with a tank and a motor on it.
Yep.
And I don't know what it held. It wasn't big. It might have held 150, 200 gallons at most of water. You're not going to do much with that, but we put out a lot of fires. It's the same rig we had back in the 50s when I was a kid.
Right.
It was Dad's old rig. And we used to fight fires... Like I said, just continually back then in the summer because things were so dry and lightning would hit. But the difference between the 50s and now is that pasture management has changed, and all of the creeks didn't have all of the brush and the trees. We didn't have the forage and the flammable material in pastures back in the 50s that we have now. So when fire started... There wasn't nearly the material to burn that we've got now.
So was there more farm ground in the 50s than
there
is now?
Yeah, there was more farm ground because the soil bank hadn't come in. The soil bank didn't come in until about 59, mm-hmm. when a lot of fields, as ours was an example, all of our farmland was planted back to grass in the late 50s. Well, all of that was farmland back in the early 50s when that drought. So you had more fields. And the pastures were grazed down a lot shorter, and the creeks didn't have all of the debris in them that burns. And
they had water?
Actually, there was water in the creeks in those days. They hadn't gone dry. Now, I'm not saying they all had water in them, but we had a big dam south of the ranch buildings that had... We had a big fishing pond down there that had been bone dry for years and years now. Yeah. Creeks have gone dry. That's partly due to irrigation west of us and other things. Yeah. But, we're just a lot more vulnerable to fires nowadays than we were back then. Yeah. So.
see that. So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share or anything that you'd want to include?
No, we just, I think I probably covered everything. I just, you know, it's so sad, the losses that people incurred that lost their homes. And as kind of a resident old timer, do I qualify as an old timer now? Like my grandfather's place and other old places around Sitka, you know, the old brown places we call it, where the Ritters mm-hmm. lived, and I, you know, all those places that, you know it well because you lived right there, that they're gone. And you drive by and you see that, and you just, you know, it's so sad to see that gone, but life goes on.
There's no landmarks.
The landmarks are gone.
Yep.
They really are. Landmarks, the buildings, the landmarks are gone. And the old ones. And for those of for those of us old enough that we remember Sitka before there was even the big grain elevator there.
Yeah.
That's a landmark to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You remember Sitka before the grain elevator?
Yes, sir.
Probably not. Do you really?
I was 4 years old when Sitka burnt.
Oh, okay.
Sherman's. We used to go to Sherman's and get candy. And then after Sitka burnt, we'd go to their house to get our mail.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Sherman liked me, so my brothers and sisters would send me to get the mail because he would always give me candy. He was supposed to throw all that candy away, you know, when they, after a fire like uh-huh. that. But he kept some, so they had a little smoke taste to them. But, and then Mary Reed had her shop open till Frank moved it to town
right.
here, which was in the 60s. And she'd sometimes be open on Halloween, so we'd go down and trick-or-treat her, or we'd go down sell her pop bottles.
We ought to have a sessions like we're doing now and have those of us talk about Sitka. Because you're losing the generation that actually went to school there.
Yes.
See, I missed it 1 year. I'll get into that now. We're talking about the fire. But I should have gone there my first year, but we moved to Ashland uh-huh. when I was in the first grade because we were remodeling the ranch house. And the second year, when I should have been in the second grade and gone to school there, I guess they heard I was coming because they closed the school.
Oh.
And so I never did get to go to school there. I was in the school, but that's another story. I used to go up there with relatives. So anyway.
Did we cover all your notes?
I think that's kind of the waterfront. I'm looking through here to see if there's anything that... No, I think we've pretty well gone through everything. You know, I could talk all day. It's like we ran into Harry and Joyce Walker, and I sure hope you get to interview Harry because he's got a really interesting story down there at Englewood about their experiences. But we went up to Dodge the other night for that, what they call it, ruckus something.
Oh, raise a ruckus for the Lord.
Raise a ruckus, yeah. And we were eating, we went to Freddy's to eat, and well, in walks Harry and Joyce. So we're eating with Harry and Joyce. And, you know, we talk about other things for about 15 minutes, and then the conversation turns to the fire. That's just the way it is now. Anytime you're with people, particularly people who live in the country who experience the fire, the conversation turns to the fire. Well, we could just talk all day.
Yes.
And you don't have time for, excuse me, for me to talk all day, but that is just locked into, like I say, it's locked into our psyche, and it's just there.
When you talk about one thing, that reminds you of a memory of another thing, and then you go this way and that way. And
so, I think about all the experiences, Vern Howell's experience up there, and Matt and Janae Wilson's experience, and we thought Max and Marge had lost their house. Turned out they didn't, but we went for about 2 days thinking they'd lost their place. Well, we were most relieved that they didn't lose it. You didn't lose your place over at Sitka. Eldora's place didn't burn. The ones that were saved, and we're like, oh, you know, thank the Lord. But there were so many that did burn. But, yeah, it's just I don't know how long it will take, if it will ever get out of our thoughts, where when you meet somebody that's from here and you start visiting, the conversation turns to the fire.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Nobody calls it the Starbucks fire. I hear reference to the news media talks about the Starbucks fire, but locally it's just the fire.
Hey, did you realize that there were two separate fires? There was the one that came up that's
yes.
called the Starbucks fire, and then there's the one that started up on Denton Ranch with the...
Southeast of Mineola.
Right.
And
then that's the one that came down south.
And they came down and kind of connected.
Yes.
And down in our countries where they connected. Well, we were just so fortunate we didn't have the winds ahead on Monday that we probably would have lost a lot more down south of Sitka in that area.
So was there still fire on Wednesday, or was it mostly all put out by Tuesday?
There was still some fire on Wednesday, but nothing that endangered anything near us. But we could still see on Wednesday there were still those helicopters were still flying and picking up water from wherever they were getting it from. And we heard there were some fires burning on the river down southeast of us, down in the Snake Creek, Miley area, down in there. And I don't know where else for sure, but I think they were small and isolated. In fact, I think some of those fires may have still been burning clear into Thursday in spots, because I heard the fire departments were still out and still going. But I don't have any direct knowledge of that. It was just...
Strike teams were out because they took Ashland, Englewood, and Mineola offline on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
So that they could get some sleep.
Okay. We were a little isolated communication-wise with the power out. I had no computer. Cell phones, I might mention cell phones. I had so many phone calls coming in. Thank goodness for cell phones. Of course, we had no power, so I'd go out and get in the pickup and charge my phone up. And thank goodness for cell phones, because that was our only communication. But I had so many calls coming in, and I couldn't take the calls. Excuse me. I think Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I was on the phone. I couldn't believe I was returning calls to friends and relatives all over the country that were calling in wanting to know if we were okay. And when I got my next phone bill, I think United Telephone... I'm not going to say they appreciated the fire, but United Telephone did real well off of the fire. Because my phone bill in April was something else.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I don't know. I had 100 and... What did I count? I had 140 phone calls came in on... Uh-huh. Or I returned. I couldn't believe how many phone calls. But if it hadn't been for the cell phone... I don't do social media. I'm an old-timer, and I don't do social media, so I don't have Facebook and all that. And so it was strictly cell phone. But at times we felt a little isolated because we weren't quite sure what was going on where.
Right. Do you take a newspaper?
Well, yeah. We get the Hutch paper. But it wasn't...
The paper wasn't...
We didn't get a paper.
They weren't even talking about this.
Did we pick up a paper until... When did Jim get down? Jim Wyatt is our mail carrier. When did he bring the papers?
Oh, I just don't remember that. But I don't know.
Maybe Wednesday or Thursday when the papers finally started coming in again. I don't know, Diana. I can't...
Tom Betchert told me the post office called him on Tuesday, somewhere else, and said, "Are you going to be open today?" And he said, "No, because... Susan had evacuated, and she wasn't back home yet on Tuesday."
Okay.
But they were in because Linda went to work Tuesday.
Okay.
But I don't know about papers. They probably weren't able to get through because they had all the roads semi-blocked.
But, yeah. I'm trying to think. When was it Wednesday morning that they let the one people in Coldwater come back?
Tuesday. They actually
was
came
it
back
Tuesday?
Tuesday. And they evacuated protection again on Tuesday. But everybody came back on Tuesday.
I was, I don't, again, those days were kind of a blur, but I was in Ashland when there was a convoy of people coming back, and I had stopped at a stop sign to get onto 160, and I had to sit there a long time as all these Ashland cars are rolling back in. And I don't remember when that was. Just don't remember. I must have come. I was thinking that was Wednesday, but maybe it was Tuesday. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But anyway, Ashland is very fortunate. Inglewood lost a bunch of homes, but as an example, Don Milligan told me that he found a place on his garage where there was an ember had landed and burned, just burned itself out. But with all those embers in the air, Ashland is very fortunate that there weren't a lot of homes gone up in flames, that went up in flames.
Yeah, it is.
So, just another miracle.
Yeah. I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming in and
you are welcome.
Sharing your story.
Hope we never go through it again.
Yeah, me too.
Interesting question about what we can do in the future. I don't know. I don't really have an answer to that. Maybe the fire department or the city or... But from a rural perspective, I have no idea. Maybe a little landscaping change and a list of evacuation and we wouldn't have left. No way.
If you would have left, would you told somebody where you went? Who would you get in contact with? Your son?
I would have called Jim and Dave. Our son Dave lives in Dodge City.
Uh-huh.
And he did come down the next... He got down on... Wednesday morning, he finally got down. But I would have called them first, and then other than that, of course, Kerr Pike was home too, and I would have let him know if I could get a hold of him. Good question, Diana. I don't know. We wouldn't leave easily. Most country people didn't leave, unless they just, like, down at the ranch, we finally just had to because of the smoke.
Right.
But...
And I think they made Max and Marge leave.
Max and Marge, they, yeah. Vernon's lucky he got out. He really almost, we almost lost Vernon. But yeah, they, nobody showed up to tell us to leave. We had no communication from any.
Lawson told me Daniel Knowles came out to Curbs.
Oh, really?
And knocked on the door and said, did you know the fire's right here? Because they were sitting there drinking coffee thinking they were okay.
He didn't come down to our place. Okay, well, I know you've probably got other people, so we'll get out of here.
Thank you very much.
You are quite welcome. What time is it? How long did it take?
You talked well.
A little over an hour. Like I said, we could sit here and talk all day.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Well, did I leave anything out critical?
No, I don't know.
Just talk.